You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Even by their lofty standards of late, this one was stunning. Night two of a road back-to-back against a Clippers squad that had won 13 of its last 15 games, playing at home, rested, looking to make a statement in what very well could be a round one playoff preview. It was a game that on paper screamed schedule loss, and not only did the Rockets not lose it, they won it in style, a 135-103 annihilation of the host Clippers, all on night two of a road back-to-back for your Rockets. James Harden led the way, 31 points on 60% shooting, also had 7 rebounds, 7 assists. Chris Paul, 29 points, 7 assists, 10 of 19 from the field. Clint Capella, 24-15. Eric Gordon, yet again, 5 of 10 from behind the three-point arc. All four of those guys, three of them guards, CP3, Harden, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, were 50% or better from the field. Just astounding efficiency. Houston as a team, over 53% overall, 47%+ from behind the arc, won the rebounding battle even by 10, and just outclassed the LA Clippers, a squad that, again, had been the talk of the NBA since the All-Star break, right along with the Rockets. They had won 13 of 15 on paper. This was a game in which the Clippers wanted to make a statement. They were still in play for even moving up to the 5 spot in the Western Conference. And the Rockets, they're still in control of their own destiny for a top 3 seed because Denver and Portland have their upcoming home and home with one another. They don't have a margin of error, and fortunately, they played like it. Again, to get that top 3 seed, they may very well need to win out home against the Knicks and Suns this weekend. That should be doable. The finale on the road at Oklahoma City, that will be tough. So was this one, though. Night two of a road back-to-back in LA against a very hot Clippers squad. And not only did the Rockets win it, they won it going away. Their 18th win in the last 21 games, improving them to 51-28 with only 3 games left to play in this regular season. So to break it all down, welcome in to a new episode here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is sponsored by our friends over at Wyze. Wyze, that's W-Y-Z-E, is the indoor camera that does it all. Head on over to wyze.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price on all of their top-notch camera equipment. Again, that's wyze.com/locked. On today's show, on this Thursday, April 4th, I'll be joined momentarily by longtime listener Roosh Williams, who has a pretty unique vantage point for the Rockets and Clippers. He's a native Houstonian and a diehard Rockets fan. In fact, he actually moderated the Real GM Rockets board when it was at its heyday a few years back. But now he's currently in law school out at USC in Los Angeles, which means that in addition to watching all the Rockets games, he sees his share of Clipper games as well. So I thought this was a great opportunity to get him connected and pick his brain about exactly what happened, especially considering the possibility that these two teams, the Rockets and Clippers, could very well meet again in round one of the playoffs beginning next weekend. And if you're not already following him on Twitter, at Roosh Williams, that's R-O-O-S-H, I strongly encourage you to do so because he's got lots of fantastic Rockets analysis. Anyway, let's get straight to the phone lines and get Roosh connected here at Locked On Rockets. Roosh, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Ben. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I think everybody's in a good mood today. How's Los Angeles? I'm guessing if there are many Clipper fans at USC Law, I'm guessing they're a bit subdued today.
You know, it's mostly Laker fans that I've seen around. But yeah, the Clipper fans that I do know were not happy about last night, but they also were not surprised about last night. So,
good point. We'll get to that in a few minutes as far as the Clippers in particular. I want to start you off. First off, thanks for joining and for being a longtime listener. Always appreciate your kind words on Twitter. And to talk a bit more about the 2019 playoffs, what we're heading to in a couple of weeks, I want to start you with a very broad question. Are the 2019 Rockets even better positioned heading into this postseason than the 2018 Rockets were, at least from the standpoint of upside? And before you answer, I know that question is going to be a bit jarring to our listeners, so I want to explain it just a bit more. The 2018 Rockets, they won 65 games. There's no doubt that that's the best team in Rockets history. And even though they didn't win an NBA title, that's one of the 10 or 15 best teams in NBA history. I am certainly not meaning that as a shot at them. Nonetheless, you see games like last night where the Rockets just bludgeon a really quality Clipper team that had won 13 of 15. Now Houston's won 18 of 21. 11 of the 18 wins have been by double digits. They're top two in offense, top two in defense since the All-Star break. And you look relative to a year ago, you've got Eric Gordon at the three in place of Trevor Ariza. There's a lower floor, but there's a higher ceiling, especially when he shoots nearly 50% from three. You effectively replace, as far as the rotation, Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute. Those minutes now going to Daniel House Jr. and Austin Rivers. Again, lower floor, but there might even be a higher ceiling. So I'm not willing to go as far as to say that the current Rockets are better, but you can at least see when they're clicking, which they clearly are right now, that there are games in which their upside might be even higher. Is that a fair characterization?
I think so. I think that one thing to consider about these Rockets versus last year's Rockets is last year we were coasting, we were clearly in the one seed, and with any team like that, especially a team that hasn't necessarily been in that position before, there can always be the element of complacency, right?
Right.
And it's something you worry about in the early rounds. I remember I had jitters about it when I was watching the Timberwolves series, especially when we were down 2-1. I'm sorry, when we were up 2-1, and I think it was game four before we burst out in that third quarter for 50 points. It was a close game, right? And it was on the road, and so that kind of element was there. But this year with these Rockets, I mean, we're rolling. We're clicking at the exact right time. Things are really starting to find their place. You know, D'Antoni's been kind of tinkering with lineups here and there, and it seems like things are starting to fall in place. The trust is there, and most importantly, in my opinion, the rhythm is there, both on the offensive end of the floor and on the defensive end of the floor. It's kind of like the things that, I guess just the intangibles and just the timing of everything seems so perfect, at least over the course of the last several games, that I think you could make a valid argument that, you know, at the very least, we're in just as good a position.
Was there a moment that you fully bought in? Because to me, the weirdest part about this, it's almost like it snuck up on me. The 18-3 stretch, them being, as mentioned, top two in offense, top two in defense. I never completely wrote off this season, even when they were 11-14, but there was always a very healthy degree of skepticism. And the strangest part about this run, it's not like there was one game to me. The closest thing I can come up with, maybe that week in early March, Boston, Toronto, Philly. Was there a point, though, for you where, you know, since the All-Star break that you sensed that, okay, I don't know if they're back is the right way to put it, because they're a different team, as we mentioned, lower floor, higher ceiling perhaps than a year ago. But was there a moment in there, a game in which you said, okay, this tells me that this Houston team has a legitimate shot to win a title?
I would say two things. The first time, see, I'm generally a pessimist. I think as Rockets fans, I think we've been conditioned that way. But the first moment that I kind of started to turn the tide and buy in is when we beat Golden State without Harden.
Okay.
And the fashion that we did it in, that kind of turned heads for me. I know those Golden State games are always weird because, you know, everyone always says Golden State doesn't take it seriously, whatever they may say. But that game proved a lot to me because it signified that Chris Paul was, in fact, the Chris Paul that we paid this big contract to, right? Everyone has kind of been criticizing him, saying CP3's faded. But I think he's obviously the critical component to the reason that we've become so good, having him next to Harden. And he had, you know, I think it was 24 points, 17 assists.
Right.
So that was the first step. The second step, I was skeptical. I wasn't skeptical, but I wasn't sold on some of those wins. For example, you know, Philly was riddled with injuries when we beat them, and I thought that would have been a statement if we had beat them, maybe with Embiid. But this might sound kind of funny, but after we lost to Milwaukee, the way we bounced back against Denver, I thought, was kind of the mark of what this team is starting to show themselves as, right? They could have easily hung their heads. You know, they could have easily said, okay, we're obviously not getting the two seed now, whatever. But they came back and they made a statement, and I mean a pretty large statement, and then we've been rolling ever since. And it's these last, I'd say, three or four games are starting to feel exactly like 2017, 2018, you know, when we were just blowing teams out by 20-plus. We're no longer forfeiting leads. You know, it just seems like everything is kind of coming together to the point where I can buy in on this team winning a championship.
And the craziest part of it is that, you know, after the Milwaukee game, we all thought the number two seed was far and gone, and at this point, that might be on the table as well. We'll get to that in just a few minutes, but for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at Wise, the folks that are responsible for bringing you today's show here at Locked On Rockets. And before I even get into my normal read and all that stuff, I actually want to give you a chance, Roosh, because you're a Wise guy, right? You tweeted me about these guys.
That's right. I am a Wise guy. I recently got a puppy. I have two dogs, actually. Recently got a puppy in January, and we were having some issues, you know, with him, like, barking and yipping when we were gone. So I got the Wise, and the Wise lets me see him, lets me hear what's going on in the house. It has a microphone, so you can even, you know, talk to them. They can hear your voice if you're that close with your pet. and you can actually use it for security purposes because it lets you record footage and save it and store it. So, and it's affordable.
There you go. See, it's only $20, no subscription required. It works with Alexa. There's free rolling 14-day cloud storage. There you go. I don't even have to read my normal promo because I actually have a true testimonial. As far as the rest of it, you guys know the drill by now. Y'all can get the best deals, wise.com, wyze.com/lock. They've got the guaranteed lowest price. As mentioned, the premium futures, you get that for just $20. That's everything you need. Runs 1080p, full HD. The images are crystal clear, night vision, two-way audio. The Wyze app, it's got a live stream with an 8x digital zoom. So if you're worried about kids or the aforementioned pets, you can watch them, contractors, whatever it may be. And if you want more, well, they've got that too. Because for just $10 extra, the Wyze Campan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds, and it automatically detects, tracks, and tags motion within its field of view. Again, to check out all of their products, just go to wyze.com/locked. Again, that's wyze.com/locked, and you'll get the guaranteed lowest price. Jumping back into our Thursday podcast here at Locked On Rockets, I'm Ben Dubose, today joined by LA-based Roosh Williams, Rockets fan, but also a bit of a Clipper expert, at least a Clipper expert as far as Rockets fans go. I want to turn our attention to last night's game in particular, since it is a potential round one playoff preview. Right now, Houston sits in the 3 spot, the Clippers in the 6, and the Rockets control their own destiny with only 3 games left. If they win, since Denver and Portland play twice, the worst Houston could finish is number 3. So, as someone, Roosh, that I know you watch the Clippers a decent bit out in L.A., they had won 13 of 15 going in. There was a lot of talk about them being the hottest team in the NBA. How surprised were you, if any, by just the woodshed beating the Rockets gave them last night?
Again, I'm a pessimist, so I was pretty surprised. But okay, when I sat and watched the game, again, you know, it really just makes sense as to why we beat them. I think the reasons that I'm worried about them is not necessarily like tactical or in terms of strategy. It's just more so in terms of the intangibles. They kind of have that element where they're young, they're long, they run, they have good shooters, but they don't shoot enough. And their offense isn't generally centered around kind of like, you know, how we have Harden and Chris Paul who run everything. Their offense is kind of more sharing, and they move the ball around, and they're athletic, and they get out in transition, you know. So all those kinds of things can kind of come together and become an element, combined for elements for, you know, disaster for your team, especially for the Rockets. But when I was watching the game last night, I mean, it just becomes apparent Zubac gets played off the floor by Capella, especially when we get playoff Capella, which I think we saw last night. They don't have anybody that can play above the rim, and they don't have size. So when you watch that first quarter, you see they have Gallinari and they have Zubac just getting roasted in the pick and roll to the point where Zubac, I think, got taken out for most of the second half, and he came back in garbage time. And I mean, yeah, they have Gallinari, but he posted us up. Guys, big guys with touch typically give us problems. And, you know, Gallinari can be one of those guys, but they just didn't have the pace, and they couldn't keep up mathematically. It's kind of like how with the Timberwolves, we used to just outshoot them because, you know, they don't shoot enough threes. Kind of the same idea. They're just generally undersized. They don't have a rim protector. Our pick and roll works them thoroughly. We can beat them over the top, I think, with general ease. and they just don't have the size. They have Montrez at 6'8", Jermichael Green at 6'9", Gallinari 6'10", and Zubac is 7 foot, but there's no authoritative size in there, you know? So I just think we could have our way with them in a potential playoff matchup.
Yeah, the Capella-Zubac, that's what really stood out to me as well. Clint had 24 and 15, but the fascinating contrast, you know, I thought back to that Laker game this Saturday in January, which Zubac was just a beast and so hard for the Rockets to handle. But the thing about that game, that was when Capella was out with the thumb surgery. So it seemed like the return of Capella, and then as you said, playoff Capella, that just completely flipped the matchup. And if you can't handle him in the pick and roll game, then it becomes so much easier for James Harden, Chris Paul to feast. They didn't have Pat Beverly, but again, Pat Beverly can only guard one of those guys. I'm not exactly sure that he's an ideal matchup for either James or Chris to begin with, even if he's playing. And by the way, Pat Beverly missing time with a hip pointer, you know he and the Clippers wanted this game. So I don't know if it's necessarily given that he's even going to be 100% once the playoffs roll around anyway. So to spin it to my next question, which is certainly related, are the Clippers at the top of your list? The four teams, we know the Rockets are going to be in the top four, barring just a colossal collapse, which isn't going to happen. Jazz, Clippers, Spurs, Thunder. Are the Clippers number one on your list of who you'd most want to play?
I say yes, absolutely, after last night. I think I've been pretty vocal, or whatever you want to call it on Twitter, but I've been very clear about my fear of the Clippers. But after last night, I think they're definitely our best matchup. What I saw last night that surprised me and that I think is going to translate to the playoffs is that we came out and we hit them in the mouth. Mm-hmm. Early on, they took a punch and they were not able to respond. And I think you saw kind of the stereotypes that you hear about youth in big moments. You know, they're young guys, they're rookies. They just kind of showed it. And then, you know, in the same token, they're just not very good on defense. You know, they don't have any, there's no one on their perimeter that can stick either of Harden or CP3. I mean, Pat Bev can give them a run. I think Pat Bev is the kind of guy that can kind of infuse them and win them a game in a series just purely off energy. But they don't have perimeter defenders. They don't have the length. You know, Lou Williams, I was scared of Lou Williams, but we all remember how poorly he played in the playoffs for us. And like I told you on Twitter the other day, I mean, I just think we're going to put Lou in the blender. And that's another thing. We really, throughout the regular season, this season, we really haven't seen the playoff Rockets where we just go ISO and switch and hunt on every single play. Mm-hmm. And I think we've been seeing more of that lately, which just kind of speaks to how locked in we are and how we're hitting that stride. So,
yeah, and Lou last night, 3 of 9 from the field, team worst minus 26 in the plus minus. That was definitely hashtag playoff Lou. Montrezl Harrell still solid, 13-6-4, but nowhere near as dominant as he was the first couple of meetings way back in October when some guy named Carmelo Anthony spent a decent amount of time on him. Were you surprised, Roosh, that the Rockets actually employed for a brief stretch in the first half the Kenneth Fareed at the 4 and Nene at the 5 grouping? I wondered if part of that might have to do with Harrell, some of what we saw in October. Again, those matchups are so far back, it's hard to extrapolate much from that. Really, Fareed, it's just his 7th game since February. He has not played much. And I really thought, based on that, that the Fareed at the 4 experiment might be completely over. I don't know that this says that it's back, but it was at least an intriguing wrinkle to me that D'Antoni is even still open to that. Did it catch you off guard, too?
It did. It really did. I was not expecting to see it. But I did want to point out that we got a plus 5 from Nene in 6 minutes, yep. In those minutes. Yep. And I think that's huge. But I was very surprised by it. I think it was against, it was Trez, and I'm not sure, I think it was Jermichael Green maybe was the other big, I can't remember.
I think that was it.
Yeah, and I mean, it worked, you know, and there was even one play, I think there was a turnover from Fareed to Nene or vice versa, but they kind of had a little, it looked like a little bit of, I guess, chemistry, maybe appropriate spacing to kind of play that two-man, big-man game when you're, you know, dishing it off in the paint. And I don't know how much we'll go to that in the playoffs, but the fact that I do like the fact that with only, you know, 3 games left in the season, D'Antoni is willing to still try some new things.
We're finishing up our chat now with Roosh Williams, LA-based, native Houstonian, but out there in USC law school, so he's certainly got a nice Clipper perspective as well, talking about what happened last night in the 135-103 beatdown the Rockets put on the Clippers. And, of course, also looking forward to the playoffs, potential preview last night could have been for the Rockets and Clippers, who after the game still remain locked in the number 3 and number 6 seeds, respectively, in the Western Conference. We've talked a lot about what went right for the Rockets on the offensive end of the floor. I'm curious, and this goes beyond just last night, what has changed so much defensively? You mentioned, as we were closing out the last segment, that they're hunting those switches even more in terms of defense, going all out. Lou Williams, 3 of 9. We talked about his ugly stat line earlier. And, of course, the Rockets have been doing this a lot lately. They're number 2 in defensive efficiency since the All-Star break. Other than the obvious, they're healthy, Chris Paul, Clint Capella is back, what's been so different for them defensively over this stretch that's enabling this level of success?
Well, I think the first element of it is, like you said, just the sheer fact that we have bodies again.
Yeah.
I think through a lot of the season, you know, clearly we all know Capella, Eric Gordon, Chris Paul all missed time. So when you're missing your best interior defender, you're missing one of your best perimeter defenders, and you're missing one of your key, one of the key guys in your rotation that can handle switches with big guys in Eric Gordon, it hurts, obviously. And Daniel House wasn't playing. So we have those guys. But I really think that this team has a switch they can flip. And I don't know how much of a fan I am of that yet.
Yeah.
But I think that we've been seeing the switch just flip, you know. I think it's really as simple as that. I don't think we're doing anything much different schematically. I just think you see guys giving effort. They're locked in. I think, and again, the rhythm is there, right? When you have bodies on the floor playing basketball, it doesn't mean that everything's going to work. But I think the timing of everything has finally gelled, especially with Chris Paul back for a long stretch at this point. So I just think it's kind of as simple as we have the bodies healthy. We have the ability to flip the switch when we want. And the Rockets know what time it is. And so they're, you know, defending accordingly.
You mentioned Chris Paul, 10 of 19 from the field. He had been in a bit of a slump in March, but two of the last three games, 22 and 50% shooting, nearly 40% from three on Saturday against the Kings. Last night, 29 and 7, 10 of 19 overall. Harden, 31, 7 and 7, 9 of 15. My outlook, Roosh, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason I've long been in, I still say I would slightly prefer the Spurs over the Clippers. After last night, you can talk me into the Clippers as far as preferred round one as well. The reason that I like the Spurs and the Clippers as far as round one opponents, if you can't slow James Harden and Chris Paul in isolation, if you can't make the Rockets at least go to a plan B or tax them, then to me, you don't have a chance assuming health. Is that a fair outlook? Because as I look at the teams they could play, you know, OKC's got Paul George, the Jazz, we know collectively what their team defense is like. Ricky Rubio, if he's healthy, Rudy Gobert inside. To me, the reason the Jazz and the Thunder, I put them a different tier than the Spurs and the Clippers, they can at least make Chris Paul and James Harden work. When I see what happens against the Spurs and the Clippers, I just, quite frankly, don't see them being able to stop plan A for the Rockets. And if that's the case, I just don't think they can take a series beyond 5 games. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I'm always wary of the Spurs because I respect Greg Popovich.
Sure.
And I think he's proven that he can scheme around James Harden. I think Chris Paul helps a lot against the Spurs. But ultimately, I think you're right. I mean, I think we would take the Spurs in a series. I would also caution against the Spurs because they can shoot.
Sure.
And if there's one coach that has proven that he can adjust in the middle of a series that can be fatal to your team, it's Popovich, right? And so I'm always just scared of what he's going to scheme up. I mean, he is the person who I think kind of began the whole, you know, hold your arms back against Harden and just body him and funnel him into the middle and see what happens defense that Milwaukee has kind of taken to an extreme.
Yep.
And so, you know, I would say, honestly, I think, and I think a lot of people might disagree because they're very hot, I would like Utah over San Antonio. I think there's the psychological factor because we dominated them last year. I like if Ricky Rubio's healthy because I don't think Ricky Rubio does much against us. I think we have a tougher time dealing with kind of like the tweener guys that have like a little bit of range, like I'm forgetting his name. Is it Derek Favors?
Yeah,
Favors. And even Royce O'Neal had flashes in that series that I thought would be more useful for them than Ricky Rubio. And Ricky Rubio simply can't guard either of Harden or Chris Paul. They do have Kyle Korver, but I just think given that, like, if you remember, Utah was on a streak last year, and they ended the season very, very hot, and they flamed out against us the same way. So I would expect something like that to happen against Utah. Really, it's a toss-up between Utah and San Antonio. They're both going to be good teams, stout defensive teams. They're going to, you know, they're going to kind of play that team game a little more than we do with our ISOs. And I think at the end of the day, Chris Paul and James Harden would be too much to handle.
So are we in agreement that OKC's at the bottom of the list? I won't say that I'm afraid of them after as many games as they have dropped of late, but it sounds like we're in agreement that that's the last as far as round one opponents. And for me, it just comes down to Paul George. If he's healthy, he can make James Harden work. And of course, he's able to take over a game offensively, at times Russ as well, in a way that the Jazz, the Spurs, the Clippers just don't. Do we agree that the Thunder at the bottom of the list in terms of preferred opponents?
Yes, absolutely. I think the Thunder are long and they're tall, and guys like Jeremy Grant can give us real problems. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, there's Westbrook, there's Paul George, there's Steven Adams, but I think the, you know, a series between the Rockets and the Thunder would kind of come down, obviously, to your ancillary players. And I think a guy like JaMychal Green could give us problems. And I just don't like going against Westbrook. He always gets up for games against us. And when you're facing a tandem that they have, like Westbrook and Paul George, I just think your chances are worse than against a, you know, a team like San Antonio or Utah or the Clippers, who don't necessarily have superstars, but they kind of go with more of a team approach.
Remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Roosh, last question for you. We spent the last segment discussing potential playoff matchups from the confines of round one, that being Spurs, Jazz, Thunder, Clippers. Looking ahead, round two, I think we're in agreement, a lot of Rockets fans these days, you want to be on the Denver side of the bracket, away from Golden State, who now appears to have the number one all but sewn up, and the Rockets, they control their own destiny for the number three. What's your outlook for the Denver-Portland home and home? The way I look at it, if Denver wins that home and home, let's say they take both sides of it, that effectively would lock the Rockets into the three seed even before that finale in Oklahoma City, which gives you a couple of benefits. Number one, you can rest guys if there are any nagging injuries. You don't have to take it that seriously. And then the other thing is that it significantly raises your floor. You don't have to worry about falling to number four. Whereas if Portland were to win the home and home, sure, it brings the number two seed into play, but it also brings the number four seed into play. Essentially, it makes it a, you know, that last game for everything in Oklahoma City. So you could be on the Golden State side of the bracket. And then the other thing is the upside. Even if you are the number two, if Denver's the three or the two, then I think we feel good about beating Denver no matter who has home court in that series. So to me, when I look at it, while the number two sounds nice on paper, to me, as I actually look at the mechanisms, I think I would prefer just have Denver win those games, lock yourself into the number three as early as possible, and then from there let the chips fall as they may. Where are you on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that I really only care about the two seed with respect to how it relates to James Harden's MVP case.
Okay.
And I know that might sound a little ridiculous, but just kind of going with the same logic as you, I'm not scared of Denver one way or another, so it doesn't really matter to me if we play them at the three or if we play them at the two. Frankly, I am more worried about the first round matchup. I'd like to get, you know, draw someone like the Clippers, and if they fall at the six, then I'm okay with the three seed. You know, getting the two, yeah, we could get home court advantage over Denver, but I don't know. I just don't think that that matters at this point. I think Jokic is a great player, but similar to the Clippers, he's got cement feet. Similar to Zubac with the Clippers, he's got cement feet, and the alley-oop over the top is there all day, so that kind of blows our offense wide open, and they also don't have any perimeter defenders that can, you know, take out CP3 or Harden in a series. So I just think we have a complete advantage over them. So yeah, I'm in agreement with you.
Last point, I should have raised this earlier, but you mentioned Chris Paul and James Harden blowing by them. Another thing that really surprised me off the bench was how effective Austin Rivers and Daniel House were. Rivers in particular just blew by Lou Williams like he wasn't even there. Austin had 11 points, plus 19. House made all three of his threes, was a plus 23. To me, what was most striking about last night, it wasn't even just James Harden and Chris Paul. Their stat lines were great. But even the secondary creators, they had their way. It just seemed like such a friendly matchup. And I know they can bring Pat Beverly back, but at the end of the day, that's only one guy. That's only one matchup. And the rest, everything is still there. So to me, I know it's one game. You don't want to extrapolate too much, but it just seemed like almost as striking of a matchup advantage for the Rockets as Denver was. Is that the way you saw it?
Yes, absolutely. Austin Rivers has the kind of fast twitch ISO ability that I think is very unique to our team. I don't think after Harden gets his buckets in different ways and Chris Paul is more deliberate, but Austin Rivers' ability to just kind of burst, he makes that hesitation move and then he bursts, and he can do it. He has this same quickness ability on the defensive end, which is what I saw when he was defending Lou Williams, for example.
Yep.
And which is why he was able to stay in front of him, which I thought with relative ease. And then Daniel House, man, I can't talk enough about this guy. I pulled up his stat. I was looking at his numbers. So he's shooting 42% from three-point land on the season. And I think that the number, I think he's 71 out of 169 on the season, somewhere around there, which is not a small sample size at all. But I looked at it, and his first 12 games when he started with the Rockets, I think he went somewhere, and I'm going off the top of my head here, but I think he went somewhere around 12 of 45. And I did the numbers. So if you don't count the first 12 games of the season, which I think you could reasonably and objectively kind of explain away as him getting acclimated to the NBA and his role with the Rockets, if you take away those first 12 games, he's 59 of 124 from three for 47.5%. And like that cannot be understated. And those are, I think that's over the last 24 games. So obviously, you know, players regress to the mean, so who knows? But that is an astoundingly high number. And I also want to say that when you contextualize how he gets those shots, he gets them, his release has become very quick. When I first saw him playing with us, he had like this kind of long windup, but he has really put in some work. He's obviously adapted the step back that Harden now has, and his release is ultra quick. So that's one thing that I think doesn't get talked about enough with respect to Trevor Ariza leaving. Ariza had a very quick trigger, and in our offense, and so did Ryan Anderson as well. And in our offense, you have to have the quick trigger because our timing is such that we kick it out and people are closing, you know, very fast. So you either have to pump and be able to reestablish and get it off, which Daniel House can do, or you have to be able to get it off quickly, which Daniel House can do. And so, you know, like if you remember James Ennis, for example, even when his percentage was kind of floating around the 40s, A, his attempts were not high enough, and right. B, he had a windup, right? So he couldn't get his shot off in certain scenarios, especially from the corner when the distance is a little shorter to that line.
Yep.
Yeah, so Daniel House and Austin Rivers, I mean, like you said, they've been replacing the Ariza and Mbah Mute roles. And in addition to that, we now have some versatility options with Fareed, Shumpert when we need. I mean, I was looking at the playoffs last year, the rotations. The only wing we had off the bench after Eric Gordon, the only guy who could play wing or guard was Gerald Green.
Yep.
Mbah Mute played in the Utah series. Obviously, he wasn't very effective. But, I mean, now we have real options. You know, we have Gerald Green as a secondary third option. Now we have Iman Shumpert, you know, secondary third option. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I am too. Folks, he's Roosh Williams. You can follow him on Twitter simply at Roosh Williams. And Roosh, I'll be happy to have you back sometime. You game?
Hey, absolutely, man. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan of what you do, and I'm glad that there's somebody to listen to after every Rockets game.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining. Look forward to doing this again.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Good stuff there with Roosh Williams. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at Roosh Williams, simply his name, and you can follow me there at Ben Dubose. And I thought we covered a lot of ground on this show. A very happy Thursday. So you know what? Let's leave it there. Don't want to be too happy for too long, because in this NBA, even lighter weight opponents, which the Rockets at home this weekend against the Knicks Friday night, that's tomorrow, and the Suns on Sunday night, they can come up and bite you if you aren't ready. So I'm sure the Rockets are turning the page fairly quickly today as they get back home. So that's what we're going to try to do here at Locked On Rockets as well. If you want more content before our next episode, which will come after Friday night's game, again, Rockets-Knicks, a standard 7 p.m. tip at Toyota Center. The best place to get it is on Twitter. Mention the handles for both Roosh and myself. You can also follow Locked On Rockets at Locked On Rockets, or you can follow us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. All those are ways you can see what's going on with the team, access prior content, interact with me, questions for the team, advertising inquiries, pretty much whatever we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Other ways that you can get in touch, especially if it pertains to advertising, email lockedonrockets@gmail.com. That's our address. Please reach out. We've got some great introductory specials, and you can become a sponsor of this rapidly growing program and support us, just as our friends at Wyze were today. Remember, Wyze, that's WYZE, is the indoor camera that does it all. Head on over to wise.com/lock to get the guaranteed lowest price on all of their top-notch camera equipment. Again, that's wyze.com/locked. And even if you can't advertise yourself, wherever you do listen to the show, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or the aforementioned new Himalaya podcast app, please go there, subscribe, in addition to listening, and leave a 5-star review, because that's how we can look attractive to potential sponsors likewise and keep the business model rolling here at Locked On Rockets as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also remember, when you get in your car, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets, and you'll find our most recent episode that way as well. Once again, the happy final from Staples Center late Wednesday night. Rockets 135, Clippers 103. Houston improves to 51-28. It's the 18th win in the last 21 games for the Red Hot Rockets. 11 of those 18 wins have been by double figures. And now with only 3 games left to play in the regular season, they're in full control of their own destiny for a top 3 seed in the Western Conference and being on the non-Golden State side of the playoff bracket. They still have work to do. Ultimately, though, for a team that started 11-14, it's a pretty good spot to be in. And, oh, by the way, the Rockets are now a cool 40-14 since that 11-14 start. What a turnaround. I know I've said it a lot, but coming off a back-to-back in California with wins in Sacramento and in LA against the Clippers, a Clippers squad that won 13-15 to win both of those games in blowout fashion against, at worst, in the case of the Kings, a mediocre team. The Clippers clearly better than that. It shows you how far this team has come. It's a great time to be a Rockets fan, and of course it'll get even better in the days and weeks ahead since we're only about 10 days out from the start of the NBA playoffs next weekend. For today, on this Thursday, April 4th, this is where we break. As always, thanks for listening, and please come back soon, really this weekend, for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of everything Houston Rockets basketball.